You're tuned to WFHB.
Volunteer-powered,
listener-supported,
community radio for South Central Indiana.
Good afternoon. Reporting remotely for WFHB, this is Cade Young.
And I'm Sydney Foreman. This is the WFHB local news for Wednesday, May 13th, 2020.
Later in the program, WFHB correspondents Jasmine White and Alex Dieterer break down a class action lawsuit against Indiana University and President Michael McRobbie's five scenarios for the fall 2020 semester.
Also coming up in the next half hour, Better Beware, our weekly consumer watchdog segment hosted by our producer, Richard Fish. But first, your local headlines. President of Indiana University Health, Brian Shockney, said IU Health is starting to reopen. He spoke about the opening process during a COVID-19 press conference on May 8th.
So we are starting to reopen our clinics. We're starting to reopen our therapies. We're starting to reopen several of our services in our community. And we're opening them very slow. We're being very methodical about it. We will not open any more than 25% of the volume that we were seeing prior to the service closing because of COVID. We will be doing testing on our patients. We do have all the precautions in place for masking all of the patients, screening patients, all of our team members being safe. So we are starting that process very methodically. We have what we call recovery teams who are going into each location. They are made up of five individuals who are experts in facilities, infection prevention, in operations, in nursing, and infectious disease. And so they're going in and looking at all of the operations to be sure that these locations are ready for patients, ready for our team members, everyone is kept safe before we go forward.
Shockney said patients may receive phone calls concerning delayed appointments. County Health Administrator Penny Caudell said testing at the new OptinServe clinic site will begin this week. She said testing is free.
Appointments will be made through a portal, and it will be that process that you look for eligibility. But some more good news is that eligibility guidelines have loosened up. So one of the changes is that people in high risk group, people who are 65 and over with chronic diseases such as diabetes, obesity, hypertension or high blood pressure, and other underlying medical conditions will be able to test even if they are not symptomatic.
Caudell said an increase in positive cases could result from the increased testing. She said last week the county saw 11 more positive cases and one death. She said the homeless community has received over 80 kits from volunteer county peer educators. Bloomington Mayor John Hamilton said the county could extend the state of emergency past May 15th. He said the city is also considering closing street sections for restaurant seating. Caudell spoke about opening retail store social distancing ideas.
But there is a calculator that one of our staff people shared yesterday during the business, and I believe it is banquettablespro.com, and it's a calculator you can put in your space, how far you want to distance people, and it will kind of give you an occupancy. So at least that's a guide that somebody might use. Very difficult to estimate, and different businesses are certainly doing it differently. I think that I remember reading when Walmart was doing this that they had some sort of calculator that they were using as well. So there may be some businesses out there that can share what models they've seen. And certainly a lot of the guidance out there is just it's guidance, and I think every business will do the best they can. And if we have issues, then the health department will have to try to figure that out as well. There's no easy answer to it.
The next COVID-19 press conference meeting will be on Friday, May 15th.
As of noon on Tuesday, May 12th, Monroe County reported 145 total cases of COVID-19. 10 people died from the virus as almost 2,000 county residents are tested. Greene County reports 17 people died from novel coronavirus. 16 people died in Lawrence County. Marion County will start reopening Friday as Indianapolis begins to implement some parts of Governor Eric Holcomb's reopening plan. This comes after Marion County reported 7,703 total positive cases and 440 deaths out of more than 36,000 people tested, by far the most of any county in the state. Meanwhile, Monroe County issues a lockdown until May 15th. Stay tuned for more information on the future of Monroe County's reopening efforts on Friday's local news.
Councilmember Scott Oldham proposed drafting a resolution for additional paid time off hours for essential workers. He spoke during the May 11th Ellettsville Town Council meeting.
And while I don't think the town's necessarily in a position to offer hazard pay, as it were, I do think we're in a position to offer hazard compensation to some of these folks, basically as a reward for making sure everything continued to function and continued to move forward. And quite frankly, I don't think COVID is something on anyone's mind when they signed up to take these jobs, that this was going to be a very real threat. So what I'd like to propose to the council is that we award for those employees who have not been able to work from home or distance working, a 48-hour PTO bonus. I'd like it to be in a separate bank, so more of a COVID bonus. To those folks, again, police, fire, utilities, those folks who are working their normal work week, as it were, and couldn't take time off or couldn't work from home.
Oldham said all essential Ellettsville workers deserve to be rewarded. He said a percentage basis could be worked out for part-time workers.
Along with that, there are people who had to come in. And what I would suggest there is that we create a percentage basis for those folks who had to endure the similar risks based upon, for instance, if your normal work week is 40 hours and you had to work 2 days or 16 hours of that 40 hours, you've worked 40% of your week. So I would suggest we award them 40% of that 40 hours. And then likewise, we have to remember that both police and fire have got part-time employees that help with the workforce. They take the place of full-time equivalents. And I would like to use the basically what I laid out for you guys in an email, a percentage basis for them so that they get some compensation as well. And I know we don't normally do that with part-time employees, but this is a very different situation than what we've ever been in before.
Continued discussion of the resolution will be heard at the next town council meeting.
College Mall Community Cares food distribution will take place on Saturday, May 23rd, from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Hoosier Hills Bank said in response to COVID-19, it will offer a one-time drive-through style food distribution. No ID or proof of income is required. Each household will receive two boxes, one dry goods and one fresh produce, along with information on local food options for food and SNAP benefits. For more information, go to hhfoodbank.org.
The Monroe County Community School Board discussed Academy High School redesign and relocation during their May 12th meeting. Assistant Superintendent of Curriculum and Instruction, Dr. Marquet Winston, said a design team was established to create a transformation plan.
Some of the results of the organization audit, I'm not going to go through all of these particular items here, but there was a lot of conversation within our design team around what are the political implications of what's happening at the Academy in terms of whether or not a separate school would be needed, in fact. So that was part of an early conversation that we were exploring because of what we knew we were going to be recommending for the building. Project-based learning is an essential component, is a key feature. And we do know and understand that many of the students who decide to go there, they do so because of that and because of the small size. But more importantly than that, they do it for the relationships that they have with the teachers and the staff there. And so we really did think that the fact that the Academy has recently been STEM certified, that we wanted to incorporate them within the Ready Schools initiative, those were very positive factors. Certainly there are some economic considerations that we've had brief discussions about, some environmental we looked at and we didn't really identify any particular in that area, social, cultural, as well as technology. So those are the areas that Valerie Pena examined and then spent some time with our design team walking us through and helping us to understand what that meant and how the survey and assessments that she conducted led us to that.
Winston said the Academy has historical issues, such as defining project-based learning. She said the Academy needs better marketing, branding, and outreach to students. She said over many years, enrollment has not increased. Superintendent Judith DeMuth said current enrollment is about a quarter of what the school could occupy based on the team's survey.
So as you can see, when we started in 10-11, we had 203 students, and at the next year, 198, and then it went descended to 161, and we've bubbled just over 100 since that time, since 12-13.
Board member Sue Wanzer said 200 students at the Academy when first opened was crowded. She asked the board to revisit the study and their goals for the Academy. DeMuth said it is being considered to move the Academy into a section of Bloomington North High School. Board member Brandon Scher said the school environment could change.
Either way, if we change it, move it into North, or if we keep it where it's at and get it to that number, that school is drastically going to change. That school will not stay the same. If it had 400 students in it, I can't imagine the same experience would be had by students and parents. Maybe totally wrong, but I guess I just wonder if the reality here is that there is going to be change one way or another. Either that current school grows bigger, which will change the culture of the school. 100 to 400 is very different. Or move into North. And I guess I'm wondering, not to say, I guess I'm just wondering if parents thought about that as well.
Board member Elizabeth Rue said families, students, and teachers need to be involved in the discussion. DeMuth said the school board plans to continue discussion over 1 year and begin implementation for the 2021-2022 school year season.
Up next, WFHB correspondents Jasmine White and Alex Dieterer break down the latest development from Indiana University in light of the COVID-19 pandemic, a student-led petition, a class action lawsuit against the university, and President Michael McRobbie releasing 5 scenarios on the fall 2020 semester. All that and more. We first turn to Jasmine White, who reports on the petition and lawsuit.
Initially, Indiana University decided to extend spring break and do remote learning for 2 weeks. After COVID-19 began spreading severely, classes were changed to remote learning for the remainder of the spring semester. A student organized a petition via change.org. The goal for signatures was 25,000, and 21,323 people signed it. The petition was created because, along with tuition, includes charges for resources used on campus. Printers, library, computers, meals, etc. are all extra fees paid within tuition. Without campus access, students are not able to use these resources. On April 30th, 2020, a decision was made by the Indiana University Board. The student reported via email to those who signed the petition. The student stated that in the university's decision, it was said, quote, "Likewise, there will not be a refund for parking passes. Parking operations is functioning based on their normal policies as stated by their website. Specific parking passes may be prorated," end quote. The full article regarding the decision can be found in the Indiana Daily Student. Amid the decision, a student has filed a class action lawsuit against the university for, quote, "services not received," end quote. IU Bloomington informatics student Justin Spiegel filed the class action complaint Wednesday in Monroe Circuit Court. In the complaint, he claims of breach of contract and unjust enrichment. The suit focuses that IU offers remote bachelor degree studies in informatics through the online program. The program's tuition costs are significantly less than traditional on-campus studies. Alexandra Didier has more information about possible scenarios and outcomes of this class action suit. For WFHB, I'm Jasmine White.
The Indiana University Office of President Michael A. McRobbie released 5 potential scenarios for the fall 2020 semester. After moving more than 100,000 students across the state of Indiana to 5 weeks of virtual learning in March, the IU and Bloomington community alike had the same lingering question: what's next? As stated in the email to the IU community, President McRobbie said, quote, "The IU community has demonstrated remarkable courage, compassion, patience, and strength in working together to keep our communities safe and healthy, while also ensuring our students can continue their academic progress during these extraordinary times," end quote. Indiana University Director of Media Relations spokesperson Chuck Carney shares the top priorities for the university going forward.
The biggest priority is simply safety, and so we're trying to make sure that we're ensuring the safety of our students, our faculty, and staff. And so all the decisions that are being made right now are really with that in mind. And with that in the forefront, it's really important to say that we know these are not easy decisions. And these are decisions that have consequences not only for our students, faculty, and staff, but for everybody involved with IU, for students, for parents, for people that do work with Indiana University. So we're taking these measures with very careful consideration because all of these are, as you keep hearing over and over again, they're unprecedented decisions that have to be made. And that's absolutely true. And while people are tired of hearing the word unprecedented, we haven't seen this in our lifetimes. So we're recognizing that. And because of that, we're trying to get the best information we can to make decisions that not just make sense for IU, but keep everybody safe.
With the priority of protecting the health of students, faculty, and staff, IU has based all decisions thus far on the most current and accurate data and guidance that is provided by the state and federal government authorities, as well as the nation's leading health experts.
Well, this is something that's been discussed at the highest leadership level. This was an announcement from the president's office, of course, and it was done really in consultation with the state and our own medical experts, our health experts, to determine what would be best for keeping everybody safe. And so that's been something that's really been developing over time, too. We began meetings with our emergency management office, AVP office, really almost right away as the pandemic became something that we knew we needed to be concerned about. Really, before it was called a pandemic, we were starting to have these meetings. In mid-January, we started having our first regular briefings. So we started having meetings in mid-January about this to just discuss where we thought that this was going to go and how this might develop and how it might impact IU. And at that time, as we saw it being a virus coming out of China, we had concerns because IU is a very international university. We have a lot of footprint in China itself. We have, of course, a lot of students from China. But we knew, aside from that, this was something that was likely to spread and we were going to need to be concerned about it, whether or not it had a direct link with China or not. Nonetheless, our policy council has been meeting, our executive leadership group has been meeting to discuss exactly what steps to take. And I think all of the steps that we have taken to this point have been really carefully considered, very prudently considered, because it's not something we could make a decision about easily.
Scenario one that IU released is a return to in-person teaching and research, a highly unlikely option at this time. Instead, scenario two is a hybrid reopening in the fall that involves both in-person and virtual teaching and research. According to the IU email, this scenario is the most likely one to implement, though, quote, "this could change rapidly with some new positive or negative development," end quote. Carney shares what this hybrid could potentially look like to students and staff.
Well, it could be any number of things. It could be that we have a set number of set amount of time where classes might be in person, and then after that online or vice versa. It could be that some classes are online, others are in person. We could have parts of a class that would be online and parts of it in person, all of it with social distancing in place, all of it with other considerations to keep people safe if they are meeting in person. But this could be something that could be literally a mix of a lot of different ways of doing the instruction. So you could have some classes that are prioritized for being in person. They couldn't be delivered in another way, or not at least as effectively online. So those might be more possible as in-person classes than some others would be. we've not done something quite like this. This is a huge lift given the number of classes and the number of students that we're talking about. So it'll be done in a way that, again, ensures that we have the most safety for the students involved.
Three additional scenarios were offered. One, the pandemic would remain so serious that the fall semester will have to be held virtually. Two, a worsening COVID-19 situation that would require returning to virtual learning in the spring after a hybrid reopening in the fall. And three, virtual learning for the whole academic year. Until a vaccine is available, several precautions were offered for how to restart in-person operations, continued social distancing, fast and comprehensive virus testing and possible antibody testing, therapeutics, temperature monitoring and surveillance, and contact tracing.
As the president indicated in these five scenarios, there one of the scenarios could be something where it would be online in the fall and in-person in the spring, or vice versa, in-person in the fall, online in the spring, or fully online, which tells you that we're planning for all sorts of capabilities here and all sorts of scenarios. And we have to. It's the truth of the matter that we have to be prepared for however this continues to develop. We hope, as everybody does, of course, that this develops in a way where the disease is clearly going down all across the country, particularly in Indiana. But we can't be sure of that right now. And so the future is really hard to say for sure.
IU has formed a restart committee, chaired by IU Executive Vice President and IU School of Medicine Dean Jay Hess, and includes the deans of the IU Schools of Public Health and other IU health, public health, and medical experts. The committee is tasked with recommending when and under what conditions IU can restart its educational, research, and other activities. To conclude his email, President McRobbie stated, quote, "I do not want to sugarcoat the situation with trite phrases or hollow optimism. Even under the best of circumstances, academic and research life at IU will not be the same for some time, and we will feel the repercussions of the pandemic for many years. It will take all of us, working together with wisdom, fierce determination, flexibility, and resolve to surmount the current crisis." End quote. For WFHB, I'm Alex Dieterer.
Now it's time for Better Beware, our weekly consumer watchdog segment hosted by producer Richard Fish.
Welcome to Better Beware. Here's your consumer watchdog from WFHB Community Radio with the latest information and helpful hints designed to keep your head out of the clouds, your feet on the ground, and your money in your pocket.
Not everybody listens to these Better Beware episodes, but you do, and we depend upon you to help spread the word when you can. These days, for example, scammers are targeting older people who may not be listening to community radio or using the internet very much, and it's getting pretty scary because the crooks are getting pretty relentless. Police agencies around the country are reporting a gang of con artists who are working a fraud they call, quote, "far-reaching, complex, and well-organized," end quote. Their most successful tactic to hook victims has been an email saying the sucker has won something, money, a trip, or something expensive like a car or even a boat. Or recently, they've been sending emails with some reference to coronavirus in the subject line. Once anyone responds, they immediately ask for their personal information, but they don't stop there. The scammers will keep making phone calls to elderly victims again and again. To gain the older person's trust, they may even send gifts or have food delivered. If the victim stops answering the phone calls, the scammers will go so far as to use home delivery services to pass along messages, or even call the local police and request a welfare check on the victim. Yikes! If the victim is cooperating, the swindlers will ask them to send money to other unknown individuals who supposedly need help, or send them phony checks, asking the poor sucker to deposit them and send some off to another stranger. These things don't trigger any fraud alerts at banks until it's too late. Some of these fraudsters are so low they could put on a tall silk hat and walk under a duck. The Indiana Attorney General warns of hackers who steal an email list from a church, and then send everybody an email that looks like it comes from the pastor of that church. When the members of the congregation open it, and the elderly ones are most likely to do so, they get a nasty virus installed on their computer. This kind of thing is going on all over the country, and we are not immune here in our area. Last January, a 77-year-old Bloomington woman was scammed out of $24,000. The crooks claimed they were from Amazon, had found fraudulent purchases on her account, and demanded money to clear things up. When she fell for this and sent them $4,000 in Best Buy gift cards, they persuaded her to send $20,000 in cash stuffed into the pages of thick books to some address in New Jersey. She was foolish, but she didn't know. And that brings us right back to you. There's a lot more fraud going around today than ever before. When you learn about it, here or anywhere, tell your friends and family. It takes all of us to keep up with it. I'm Richard Fish for WFHB News and Public Affairs.
Better Beware comes to you from WFHB Bloomington, Indiana. Find all our episodes at wfhb.org. If you can help put the kibosh on a con, email beware@wfhb.org. Remember, swindlers never give a sucker an even break. You've been listening to the WFHB Local News. Today's headlines were written by Cade Young and Sydney Foreman in partnership with CATS, Community Access Television Services. Our feature was produced by Jasmine White and Alex Dieterer.
Better Beware is produced by Richard Fish. Our theme music is provided by Mark Bingham and the Social Climbers. Our executive producer is Cade Young. For WFHB, I'm Sydney Foreman.
And I'm Cade Young. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported, independent local news program. You can hear tonight's full broadcast as well as other WFHB programming online at wfhb.org.
You can be a part of our award-winning news team. For more information about joining our volunteer team of citizen journalists, email news@wfhb.org.
Stay tuned for Cool Solutions, coming up next on WFHB. Listening to the WFHB Local News on WFHB Community Radio. Our news is written and reported by volunteers working to provide local news, cover local issues, and strengthen our local community. We invite you to participate. You may submit questions, comments, and story ideas to news@wfhb.org. You can become a WFHB Local News volunteer by attending new volunteer orientation. Feel free to check out the WFHB Local News Archive at wfhb.org to find newscasts, individual stories, and catch a live feed of the WFHB Local News. We are local, longer,